It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz in for Kate Archer-Kent. Most state websites for booking COVID vaccinations have accessibility problems, making it hard for people who use screen readers to get the life-saving vaccine. That's according to the Kaiser Health News and the accessibility nonprofit WebAIM, which reviewed the websites. We're checking in with Wisconsin's blind community this morning, and I invite you to come along and imagine how your life could be completely changed if you could not see. What have you always wanted to know about being blind, but were afraid to ask? Are you blind? Do you have low vision? What's been the hardest thing to deal with over the past year? We'd love to hear from you this hour. We're at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Our two guests this morning are from the Wisconsin Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired, based in Madison. They're a nonprofit that advocates for Wisconsin residents that have low or no vision. They teach classes on assistive technology. They do vision evaluations, so much more. Denise Jess is the council's executive director. Good morning, Denise.
Good morning, Molly. Thanks so much for inviting us this morning.
Oh, I'm so happy you're here. And with you is Jim Denham, an access technology specialist.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Well, Denise, let's start with you. You've been legally blind since birth, as I understand. And given the need for social distancing and staying home in the pandemic over the past year, how has that affected your work and your life?
That's a great question. Thanks for starting there. There's, I think, both tremendous assets and tremendous detriments to what life has been like for people who are blind and visually impaired over the last year. I think one of the tremendous gifts is that it's really revealed and made, I think, somewhat public the challenges and barriers that are always there for those of us who are visually impaired. So, you know, we moved, like everybody else, our workforce to remote work so that we could continue our services and do them safely. And about a third of our staff, including both Jim and myself, are folks who experience, vision loss. And so making sure that we could do everything that we needed to do remotely using access technology, interfacing with websites, interfacing with meeting platforms, became a top priority. And we had laid that foundation well before the pandemic. So we were able to make that move and, you know, discovered very quickly which meeting platforms were accessible, which ones were less accessible, and which ones were completely inaccessible, and had to advocate for meetings to be held on accessible platforms. We did get to remove transportation a little bit from the dynamic, but not a lot, you know, for necessary trips. You know, public transportation became more challenging, more problematic. So, yeah, you know, exposure to the issues, I think, are there. And then really running into those real life barriers were really, really pronounced.
Jim, are Denise's experiences, do they ring true to you? What was your life been like over the past year?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, spending a lot of time in front of my computer these days and working from home, working in a home office. You know, just going out and about as a person, I have no usable vision. So can go out and about, you know, just kind of that awareness of, okay, who's wearing a mask, who's not wearing a mask. And just kind of trying to stay away from people and keep the six foot distance without, you know, knowing exactly where people are at sometimes.
Right.
Can be a little bit challenging. So, you know, and you know, access to meeting platforms, making meetings virtual, accessing information online. So it's definitely been a challenge.
So what sort of technology do you use?
So I am a person who has no usable vision. So I use screen reading software. So that's software that reads information off the computer screen. I use a program called JAWS, which is nothing to do with the movie.
Yeah.
but it stands for Job Access with Speech. And it reads information auditorially to when I access the computer. So I'm browsing a web page or reading a doc through a document. I'm listening to that information rather than looking at it visually.
Yeah, I wanted to hear what it was like to use one. So last night I downloaded just a screen reader extension for the Chrome web browser, and I went to the Wisconsin Public Radio website just to hear what it would do and what, and here's what it sounds like.
Window, new tab. Wisconsin Public Radio, skip to main content, internal link. Wisconsin Public Radio, section, Wisconsin nearing 1M residents fully vaccinated against COVID-19, link heading 2 aside.
That, you know, that wasn't JAWS, that was just a Chrome extension, but I wanted to get a sense of what it was like to navigate the internet that way. I mean, this is a far cry from audiobooks where you have voice actors. I mean, this is a robot with no inflection, no change in tone. Is that pretty typical?
It is. You're hearing synthetic speech there. It's called synthetic speech. And that is just one of the voices that's kind of built into Windows. There are some other voices that are a little bit more human. So some people who are blind or visually impaired use some voices that are a little more human sounding. But what you're getting there is, you know, you're reading through everything on the web page. So one of the things that we really work with people on is trying to, you know, find the information they need, because visually, when you look at a web page, your eyes are kind of drawn to the center of the page or the main points of the page. Or with a screen reader, you're really just reading it kind of one line at a time. You're just kind of going through the page and getting it one line at a time. And so it's important to have commands to be able to skip to the information you need and find the information you need quickly, so you're not reading the entire web page just to get, you know, the time that bus is going to arrive or the time that, you know, how much this product's going to cost on Amazon. So you really want to be able to just, you know, move around the page and access the information that you need.
And you teach people to use this software. How long does it take people to get the hang of it?
It's relatively quick. I mean, we spend different training sessions with individuals, and a person who just wants to, you know, just basically navigate the internet and learn how to do documents and move through documents and different things. You know, provided they have good keyboarding skills, they can usually pick it up pretty quickly. The commands are fairly intuitive. The biggest challenge is, you know, teaching people to listen rather than read. We work with individuals who are, you know, losing their vision and are used to looking at a computer screen, and working with them to, okay, you're gonna access information so much quicker by listening to it rather than trying to read it, because maybe your eyesight is declining and it's really difficult for you to access that information visually. So that's the biggest transition, is working with people to get them to listen to a page auditorily and get the information auditorily, rather than trying to read it visually.
We're talking to Jim Denham, Access Technology Specialist with the Wisconsin Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired, as well as Denise Jess, Executive Director of the Council. And Denise, I want to ask you about these state websites that for COVID vaccine access. So much more we've had to do online. And I understand you have been navigating all of these websites trying to find what it's like to actually get an appointment. Did you find that our sites here in Wisconsin are accessible?
No, they aren't. There's portions of them that are, and there's often the screening questions that you're required to do to see if you qualify for whatever level of vaccine distribution we're at. And those are generally quite accessible, both using a screen reader and using magnification software. You know, many of the folks that we work with, in addition to using screen readers, use magnification software, and I use a combination of the two. So that, you know, that worked generally pretty well. And I was pleased with that. When you get to the actual scheduling piece, where you're going to select your appointment time, you know, that isn't coded correctly so that I can navigate it using keyboard commands. It's very mouse dependent, and sometimes doesn't code to tell me that something is selectable. So in order to schedule an appointment, it's almost like guesswork. Like, I think I've scheduled it for Friday, April 2nd at 3:00, but I'm not quite sure. And I don't have a way to verify that until I actually set it up and then get the confirmation. So I ended up moving off the websites and just took the time to wait on hold to schedule a vaccine by talking with, you know, a live scheduler.
Jim, have you had experiences trying to navigate the COVID websites? What have you found?
Yeah, I've got similar experiences to Denise. You know, the websites are, you know, a little bit tricky to use. One of the ways that I, you know, navigate the websites is I don't use a mouse. So I'm navigating with just a keyboard. And so one of the issues that we've come across is some of the controls are not fully accessible with just using the keyboard. So people who are blind or visually impaired, a lot of them, you know, using screen magnification software, screen reading software, are just using the keyboard. So accessing those, that information. As Denise said, the scheduling site can be really, really tricky. One of the issues that we came across on the vaccinate.wi.gov website was there was a CAPTCHA. And a CAPTCHA is the automated thing that says, you know, enter the characters you see, that kind of thing. And, you know,
the pictures.
Try and prevent spam. Yes. And there was an audio CAPTCHA, but the audio CAPTCHA did not work well, and it was really difficult to use, and there was no instructions. So we are working very closely with DHS to try and make the website more usable and more friendly for people who are blind or visually impaired. And they have made some progress and are working on some rollouts to make things a little more accessible and more usable. But there's definitely challenges in doing this. Absolutely.
Our guests this morning are Denise Jess and Jim Denham. Both have faced barriers in the pandemic as individuals who are blind, and they work for the Wisconsin Council for the Blind and Visually Impaired. It's a nonprofit based here in Madison. I'm Molly Stentz, and this is the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz, in for Kate Archer-Kent. We're examining what it's like to live without sight. And we have two experts here to lead the way. Do you have low vision? Has accessibility technology gotten better over the years? What still needs work? We're at 1-800-642-1234 or ideas@wpr.org. We have Denise Jess and Jim Denham here with us. Both work for the Wisconsin Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired. Denise, I want to ask you about voting. So many of us have used absentee ballots in the pandemic, and I understand that Wisconsin does not have an ADA compliant absentee ballot. What needs to change?
We need to have an ADA compliant ballot. So in the state of Wisconsin, we have at the polls, we have screen reader and large print, large screen available technologies, and that is required to be set up in every polling place by federal law. So when we vote in place in the polls, we have access or should have access to that technology, which allows us to vote privately and independently. In Wisconsin, all ballots that are absentee, unless you're voting in person at the prior to the election, all absentee ballots are sent out on paper. So imagine holding a piece of paper that's folded, you know, in an envelope when you pull it out, and you have absolutely no way to interact with that piece of paper because you can't see it, you can't physically mark it. So in the state of Wisconsin, when I choose to vote absentee, like many other Wisconsinites who are blind and visually impaired, I need assistance. So I need to have my ballot read to me, and then I need to have someone mark that ballot. So my ability to vote privately and independently is sacrificed when I vote by mail. So, and I have folks in my life who I trust to mark my ballot responsibly, according to my wishes. There are Wisconsinites who don't have anybody at home that can do that, and that's particularly problematic during a pandemic. Or they may have folks in their home that they can't assure that their ballot's being marked correctly. So we have been advocating for Wisconsin to be able to send to qualified voters an electronic copy of the ballot that's already law in the state to send to military and overseas voters. So we would like to see that extended to voters who are blind or visually impaired or have reading disabilities or cognitive disabilities so that we can hear the ballot, physically mark it with our computers, and then be able to send it back. And that part of that work of sending it back would be electronic submission, which is not currently legal in the state. So any of those actions would require the legislature to amend Wisconsin's voting laws.
Well, and I understand that the legislature is considering amending Wisconsin's voting laws right now. There's, I think, at least 10 bills that would change the election yeah. process.
Yep.
But this isn't one of them.
This is not one of them. So there are bills in the legislature which we have concerns would have unintended consequences that would even cause more barriers and limitations to voters with disabilities and elder voters, including people who are blind and visually impaired. So this bill to amend Wisconsin law to allow for an accessible ballot is not currently one of the bills introduced, and it's one of the things that my colleagues and I have been advocating for tirelessly with legislators in both the majority and minority party to bring awareness to the lack of ability to vote privately and independently.
So one of the bills that is on the docket has to do with the status of being called indefinitely confined in order
right.
to get an absentee ballot. And there's one bill that would require a signature from a primary healthcare provider in order to qualify. Yeah. How do you feel about that bill?
It's very concerning to those of us who advocate for accessible voting because in many cases, it would be difficult to get that primary health care provider's signature to validate. You know, there's HIPAA issues that would be around that. There's transportation issues of getting to the doctor to get that document signed. And then, you know, there are potential legalities of the doctor signing off on something like this. So the barriers just to get that piece of paper and then have to provide that piece of paper, you know, it's again kind of quote unquote registering people with disabilities. And that's very concerning.
Mm. And Jim, what is the technology like for how does this compare to actually voting in person?
So the technology of voting in person, like Denise mentioned, every site has an accessible voting machine that can be used. And the way that works is the person who's blind or visually impaired, you know, requests access to it when they show up, and they either bring their own headphones or use headphones that are there. I always encourage people to bring their own headphones if at all possible. And then the ballot is fed into the machine, and each race is read aloud using synthetic speech, kind of like the speech that you played earlier. And then using a series of keys, the voter is allowed to select an individual candidate for each race. And then the chance to review your ballot so you can go back and say, okay, I voted for this, and voted for this, and voted for this, and so make sure you do it correctly. And then once you're done, you push a button, and it will actually print the information on that ballot. So it's really a pretty easy process once you get the hang of it. The machines are really well marked and quite easy to use. So, you know, we always encourage people who are blind or visually impaired, you know, participate in the voting process. We definitely want you to be at the table, and there's technology out there that allows you to participate and allows you to be part of the voting process. So if you do want to vote, you know, definitely, you know, go and, you know, ask for that accessible voting equipment and use your cast your ballot.
And Denise, I understand there's another bill that would require family members to return the absentee ballot for a voter. Would that pose a hardship?
Yeah, potentially. You know, that ballot called ballot harvesting and placing limits on who can return the ballot to the clerk or to the polling place or to central count. So, you know, again, You know, many folks who are blind and visually impaired, if they live alone, if they don't have access to a family member, if they don't entrust that family member to safely carry their ballot, you know, that being able to have the ballot envelope, certification envelope properly signed should be sufficient for anybody then returning that ballot to the appropriate authorities on behalf of someone with a disability.
Well, the time has gone by so fast this hour. I want to thank you both for joining us this morning. Denise Jeffs.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you. Jim Denham, Access Technology Specialist with the Wisconsin Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired. And Denise Jeffs, Executive Director of the Council.
Thanks, Molly, so much. Love to come back again and talk again.
We will have to have you back. Up next is news, and then we'll take a look at virtual learning for kids who are visually impaired. I'm Molly Stentz, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz. How does school work when you're blind? Virtual school can be hard enough, right? Getting your kids to focus on the screen for hours on end, helping them find the motivation to turn in their work when they don't have to face their teacher in person, not to mention learning to use online meeting software. Hey, I think you're muted. Are you an instructor who works with blind children? What's it been like? How do you view the future of Braille? Do you think it'll be replaced by technology? We're at 1-800-642-1234. ideas@wpr.org. Dan Wenzel is the director of the Wisconsin Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired, which is based in Janesville, and it was founded in 1849. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Molly. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Great to have you here. Well, give us a snapshot of your operations. How many students do you have? What services do you offer?
Well, right now, as you can imagine, with the pandemic and a fairly large graduating class, we have in the mid-30s for student numbers, which is low. We expect that to increase as we get back into in-person instruction. I want to point out, though, that we also have outreach services that reach students throughout the state of Wisconsin. And so, you know, there are 1,500 blind people, blind or low vision students throughout Wisconsin. And so we work to reach as many students as we can.
And I understand that your campus is closed to in-person instruction right now. Are you still working remotely?
We are still working remotely. We have been in a remote learning setting since the middle of March in 2020. I'm happy to report, though, that we will be giving some limited in-person instruction for area students starting in mid-April, April 19th, actually. So that's an exciting first step towards getting back into in-person instruction. Although I will tell you that I think our virtual instruction has gone extremely well. We've learned a lot, and we're going to be better at what we do because of this challenge that we faced.
So how is that virtual instruction taken place? What kind of technology do you need to have and use?
So right now, our students access our learning platform through the Google Classroom. And we have, as you can imagine, as any school, we have students of varying abilities to use technology. So we also have some technology specialists that work with students to, if they have trouble accessing the class, we use some software where we can actually go into their computer with their permission, of course, and get them into class. So they are utilizing a Google Classroom setting. That being said, we also provide students with a hard copy of much of the instructional material. Every student was given a laptop, so that way they are able to access the curriculum. Students have Braillers. We have a system where we can send hard copy Braille back and forth. And so we definitely have all areas covered, I think.
So I imagine you draw students from all over the area. How do you get the materials back and forth from their homes to your instructors?
Very good question, and especially with, you know, as you can imagine, this pandemic has made mail interesting at times. Appreciate all the postal workers out there doing the job, of course, but we have a delivery system where we have some of our staff actually making deliveries to students' homes, and that way they get their materials in a time, you know, on time, and then they also leave their materials for us to pick up. So we arrange an approximate time with families, and we drop off the materials that they're going to need up to every week. And then they send back homework and projects and those sort of things that you just can't do electronically, because of course we're doing a lot of things, you know, through email and using the Google Classroom, but you also have things that have to be done in hard copy, such as Braille. And, you know, at least some of the assignments, there is refreshable Braille displays that can be used also, but in order to get some of those assignments and look at accuracy for our students, we need to have those hard copies too. So we have staff that provide a delivery service.
So how do you handle things like labs, science experiments?
Well, you know, first of all, there is, of course, the class itself is virtual. And again, we can send the hard, the materials to the students, you know, but we also have time set aside where we have individual time where teachers can meet with students. And so we can also meet their individual needs. And so, you know, a science course, certainly we're going to utilize technology a bit more and, you know, it's not going to be quite as hands-on, quote unquote, so to speak, but they're going to get to access videos. They're going to utilize the World Wide Web. And then we are going to be able to give them materials. We can get, you know, students can have textbooks in their hand in whether it's large print or Braille. They can have magnification software in order to read effectively. So we're, you know, it's the next best thing to being there.
We have Dan Wenzel here. He heads a state center for those who are blind and visually impaired. And Dan, I wonder what type of student comes to your school and your center as opposed to receiving materials in their home district or, you know, through an IEP process in their own homeschool district?
That is a very good question. We have students, We have students, all different types of students from different areas. And I will tell you that the Wisconsin School for the Blind and Visually Impaired is a placement option for any student. One student maybe have a lot of success within their district, and maybe our outreach services can help that student to have success. Another student may at some point in their career, their academic career, benefit from coming to the school for those, you know, services that we can offer on a daily basis. For example, our students can gain Braille instruction on a daily basis. Our students can gain orientation mobility instruction on a daily basis. So it's up to the IEP team to get together and determine if the Wisconsin School for the Blind and Visually Impaired is the appropriate placement at a certain time. For some students, they might be at WSVVI for their most of their academic career. For others, they may come at different points in their academic career. For another student, it might be, hey, I'm just about to graduate, but I need some of those independent skills, and I need to practice, you know, cooking on a daily basis, and that's something that our school can offer.
And is there a cost for parents to send their children?
There is no cost for parents, no cost at all. Just like at a local school, there's no cost for parents.
And so you are funded through public school districts, through the state?
Yeah, we're funded through the state. That is correct. And we get receive federal funding as well.
And has your funding changed from the pandemic?
We did just recently receive some ESSERS funding to help us with modifications that will, you know, help us as we continue to navigate the pandemic world, but not really of, you know, how we're utilizing the funding. It's still benefiting students, and that's the key. You know, we're just having to do things a little differently. And so that, you know, it's definitely opened our eyes and given us some opportunities that we're going to continue. You know, the fact that our students, for example, now each student has been issued a laptop. When they return to school in person, they're still going to have that laptop. That is so important. And they're still going to have the ability to bring that laptop when they go home so they can do homework. That type of thing is not going to change. I think that this has given us an opportunity to really utilize technology even more than we have before and find ways that we can integrate it within the curriculum at any time. And so I think that's exciting.
Have you found broadband challenges? Do all of your students have access to high-speed internet where they live?
We've been pretty lucky in that area, but you know, if not, we have sent I can't remember what it's called, but
like a hotspot,
Wi-Fi thing, a hotspot. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
You know, when I was in school, we started with typewriters, so yep. the technology thing. But I will tell you that we send hotspots to students. We are committed to making sure, and we've had a number of students where we've had to problem solve. But I'm happy to tell you that our students can access our curriculum on a daily basis. That gives a credit to our student services team and our staff. You know, I've been really lucky because our management team and our teachers and our residential staff have done such an excellent job. Our educational assistants, I've just had to help make sure that the protocols are in place and that they have the materials that they need. And so it's been a pleasure working with a team that is so innovative. And, you know, I'll tell you, like I said, we're learning so much, and we're going to be putting that into our toolbox that can be utilized from now on.
We're speaking with Dan Wentzel. He's the director of the Wisconsin Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired. I'm Molly Stentz, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz. We're speaking with Dan Wentzel. He's the director of the Wisconsin Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired, which is based in Janesville. Educators, what resources have you found helpful for teaching kids with low or no vision? We'd love to hear your tips. We're at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Well, we had a call from Jack in Stevens Point. Couldn't stay with us, but he wants to know, Dan, are there Braille printers, and are these available to students?
There are Braille printers. They're called Braille embossers. Not every student has a Braille printer for sure. There are some models that can be for individuals. But our students do have Braillers, which is kind of the like a typewriter in order to Braille. And they also have slate and stylus, which is like a pencil. So not every student has a Braille printer. We do utilize these Braille embossers, though, to produce hard copy Braille that we can then send to students. But no, our students do not each have a Braille embosser in their home. They're a fairly pricey item, but certainly our students are producing Braille, just like many students are out there producing print documents for their school.
And I've read that some experts predict that Braille may not be around forever, that with the advent of screen readers and all of this assistive technology, that it could eclipse the use of the printed word, so to speak. What's your take on the future of Braille?
I think that Braille is going to be around for a long time, and I think that we have to look at technology as an an ally to Braille. Now students have Braille available at their fingertips more quickly than ever before. There are equipment that provide refreshable Braille displays, so they can read Braille that is on, you know, that through a document on their computer, and they can be reading that in Braille. I think that really enables us to increase students receiving Braille. I also would point out that data shows that students who read Braille are more likely to be employed. Students who are blind or have low vision, if they read Braille, they are more likely to be employed. This is an important medium. And just because technology is becoming more and more prevalent, and that's a great thing, we need to harness that resource. That doesn't mean that we're going to give up for our sighted students, the pen and paper. That doesn't mean that we're going to give up, you know, hard copy books. And that's the same for our blind students. They need to have that hard copy in their hands as well. That's why we have the delivery system. That's why it's important. Our virtual education would be less if we didn't offer that to our students. So for those students who read Braille, I think it's crucial to continue getting it in their hands. And I just don't see it going away. I think that we don't want to be in a world where you're only accessing things using audio.
Do all of your students read Braille?
That is a decision that is made within the IEP team, and it's made through assessment to determine whether Braille is going to be the most effective reading medium. So some of our students read print, some of our students read Braille, some of our students can read both. Some of our students will access audio. But, you know, the most successful students are the ones that are able to read effectively. And if Braille is going to be that method that offers that, then that's the best for them. It's not better than print, and print isn't better than Braille. It's what the student needs for their individualized education program, and that's determined by the IEP team. Now, we do have some students that have some residual usable vision that can read both Braille and print, and I know no one that suffers from knowing more than one reading medium. That's, you know, that gives them even a step up. But Braille is an important resource for our students.
And you mentioned that students who read Braille are more likely to be employed. Why is that?
I think because you're looking, those students that need Braille, especially those that maybe have a little residual vision, if you're using too large a font for print, you're starting to not be as efficient a reader. And somebody who's comfortable reading, of course, we know that reading is the foundation of education and the foundation of those skills that are going to be needed in the work world as well. So I think that's one of the reasons. I think that knowing Braille and having just those skills in general, another important skill would be to be able to travel effectively. Those types of skills lead to employment and being able to be comfortable and having ways to take notes, having ways to read documents. You know, it's not all just on the computer. And you also, when you're traveling and that sort of thing, you need to be able to access things, maybe sometimes not in an electronic format.
Yeah, you mentioned travel and mobility, and a listener actually wrote in and they're wondering how mobility and orientation works virtually. It's such a hands-on course of getting the students out, working with the canes, learning to cross streets and navigate the city safely. And they're thinking it's nearly impossible to do virtually. How does that work?
Well, I will say it is certainly a challenge. And if I were to look at an area that probably is the most difficult to cover virtually, I think that orientation mobility is that area. So, of course, when we get students back, we're going to be providing some additional services to ensure that they get those skills. That being said, there's a lot more to travel or orientation mobility than just getting out there with your cane. And that's something our students can still do. They can go for a walk with their family around the block to practice cane technique. They can go if they have the general skills, they can go and run to the store for, milk and that sort of thing. I'm legally blind myself. And I know my parents sent me to the store many a times to pick up, you know, milk or bread or whatever. So you want to integrate travel naturally in anyway. Bus systems are still running, but we utilize some computer programs and technology. A lot of travel deals with research. So I have the opportunity to travel throughout the state of Wisconsin. If I'm in a city that I haven't been in before, I have to do research to see what transportation options there are, whether there's a bus system, whether Uber or Lyft serves the area. Am I going to need a driver? Is everything going to be within walking distance? With having smartphones with you all the time, you have information at your fingertips. When I first started working with blind people who are blind or have low vision 27 years ago or so, I didn't have a phone in my hand that I could check when the bus is going to arrive. Yeah. So technology has really made, in a lot of ways, orientation mobility for blind people easier.
But you have to do a lot of planning.
Yeah, I would say, and this is something that think about, I would say our students, particularly as they go into the world of work, have an advantage maybe over some of their peers, because people who are blind or have low vision naturally become problem solvers, because we have to problem solve through, can we get this document in an accessible format, or how can we do that, or how can we, approach a teacher or an employer and say, hey, I need this in a different format because I'm not able to access it, in a regular print document. We have to go and plan travel a bit more, and it's not that we can't do it. I don't think that it's a disadvantage. I think what it is, it's a matter of planning. There are sighted people from throughout the country that only use public transit. So we're not the only ones accessing that, but we do have to be able to problem solve. And those problem solving skills will lend themselves to success after graduation from high school, whether they go on to post-secondary education or whether they go on to the world of work. Having those problem solving skills are a positive. And that's what we at WCBVI, both through our outreach department and school, those are the type of skills we're trying to help our students develop. It's called the expanded core curriculum, where they're dealing with skills that will help them to be successful and independent as adults.
That's a really good point about problem solving. And I want to ask you before we get to the end of the hour about Braille Fest. I hear that that's happening next month.
That is happening next month. So every Monday in April, we are having different Braille Fest activities. Now, unfortunately, registration for that is closed, but we're serving students both at our school and throughout the state. And we're going to do fun activities. We're going to do, challenging activities for students that all involve Braille, that also make sure that Braille is the focus and centerpiece, and there, it makes Braille fun. Let's face it, we want to make literacy and reading fun, and so this is a chance to get students involved. In the past, we would bring everybody to the campus and have a couple days of Braille Fest activities. Now we're going to do it virtually. It'll be the first virtual Braille Fest that we've held, and I'm excited that we probably have some students that we haven't reached before in the state that are going to be involved in this. So let the fun begin.
Well, we'll leave it there, Dan.
And the learning begin.
Yes. Thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you so much for having us. And I look forward to talking in the future as we navigate the world of COVID-19 and educating
sure
our students.
Dan,
such an investment.
Thank you. Dan's the director of the Wisconsin Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.